The time is 7 o'clock. This is Redwood Community Radio, KMUD Garberville, KMUE Eureka, KLAI Laytonville. It's time for the pilots. I'm sorry. It's time for Ask Your Herb Doctor. But first, I'd like to let you know that support comes from the Redwood Coast Energy Authority, which wants the community to know there are a variety of resources to help customers pay their bills, find the right rate plan, and manage their energy use during the current crisis. Visit redwoodenergy.org for complete details or call 707-269-1700 for more information. This is your engineer, and you're probably expecting to hear the opening chords of the Ask Your Herb Doctor theme song, but somehow I managed to erase it from my talk show themes thing. Oh, I think I know how to find it. Hold on. And the Herb Doctors haven't called in either, so I will drop them an email and find their theme song somewhere. The Herb Doctors. Do we got you?
Yeah.
Excellent. And Dr. Pete, do I have you?
Yes.
Excellent. And Sarah, I believe you're on Dr. Pete's same line as him. So we do have a caller open for phone calls, too.
Oh, good. Yeah, Andrew and I are on the same line. We're on speakerphone. Can you hear us all okay?
Oh, yeah. So you're both on the VIP. Okay. Someone else might have called in, and I might... Okay, well, good. We've got you both. No, We've got two lines open.
I called in on the VIP just a minute ago, and then I got talking to you, then I hung up, and then Sarah called 3911.
Oh, okay. So no one is on the VIP right now. Okay, so we have one line open for callers when the time comes in a half an hour or so, and take her away.
Okay. Welcome to this month's Ask Your Herb Doctor. My name's Andrew Murray.
My name's Sarah Johannesson Murray. Welcome.
For those of you who've never listened to the show, they run from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock on the third Friday of each month. And from 7:30 till the end of the show at 8 o'clock, callers are invited to call in with any questions regarding the subject. And the number is 707-923-3911. So from 7:30 till 8 o'clock, people are invited to call in with questions. And Dr. Raymond Peet is our guest speaker. Dr. Peet, can I just confirm that you're on the line?
Yes, I can hear you barely.
Okay, can you hear me any better now?
Not much. But it'll do, I think.
Well, Andrew, if you guys called back on the VIP line, he should hear you a little bit better.
Line.
Okay.
Thank you.
And why don't we have Dr. Peet introduce himself, and he can say what his specialty is.
Now you want me to?
Yeah, because they're calling in, so you're alone here for a second. So could you just tell our listeners kind of who you are and what your background was?
I used to study and teach literature, painting, humanities. And in 1968, I went back to graduate school in biology, University of Oregon, for a PhD in physiology, physiology and biochemistry, especially relating to aging and female hormones. And since 1972, I've been studying, writing, and consulting with people, individuals, and doctors.
Excellent. And for some reason, they're not calling in on the VIP line. Could you tell a little bit more about your history? I'm going to go troubleshoot in the other studio.
Okay. My dissertation was on the oxidative changes in respiratory chemistry of uterine tissue in particular, but to some extent the whole organism, and how it changes during aging, and how that relates to the infertility of menopause. And it turns out that estrogen, rather than being just the female hormone, as they have called it, is really a stress-related hormone that is equally active and dangerous in men as in women. And those age-related changes and estrogen-related changes can be imitated by things that interfere with cellular respiration, including ionizing radiation, and they're offset by a variety of things, especially progesterone and vitamin E. Much of my attention, especially in the 1970s and 80s, was on how the polyunsaturated fats in the diet interact with all of these stresses, aging and excess of estrogen in particular, correspond to the deterioration of polyunsaturated fats by random oxidation. And so a basic thing to protect against aging and stress is to simply reduce the amount of polyunsaturated fats taken in the diet.
Excellent little summary. So the herb doctors are suddenly MIA. I checked the other thing in the other studio, and they had called in earlier on the VIP line. So I'm not. They said that actually it didn't work earlier before they had tried. So maybe we have some problem our phone line, and I just emailed them to try calling 3911 again. And if you're listening in, please call 3911. And do you know what the topic was which you're speaking of today?
We're going to start out talking about and maybe listening to an interview between David Martin and Rainer Fuelmisch and colleagues relating to the history of the so-called the COVID virus and the surrounding patents and financial relations.
And what was the other David Martin and whom?
Rainer Fuelmisch, who is a German lawyer in both California and Germany, who is saying that the state governments are falsifying information relating to the pandemic and is organizing legal challenges to the lockdowns and other government restrictions. And David Martin is a financial advisor who part of his business is the advising investment organizations on how to evaluate patents and other intellectual property.
Excellent. Switching
over. So he has now for over 20 years been analyzing patents in detail, and he has gone through all of the patents closely related to the virus and vaccine. So he has a unique perspective on the legal situation and the historical financial connections to the pandemic.
Excellent. So I searched for that. I can't find it on YouTube offhand, but we have the herb doctors back, and I suppose they'll be able to play for us. You're back. Yes. Excellent. Thank you.
Hi, Dr. Pete. Can you hear me?
Yep. Now.
Okay, good. I'm sorry about this technical hitch we've had here with the internet. I think hopefully this will be clear now. And I can hear you well. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm not too sure. I heard you leading into perhaps what we were going to discuss this evening with Dr. David Martin and what he's just exposed and the basis for it. Would you just quickly mention what you were saying so I understand where you were before I want to read out a transcript of some of these facts and some of the information that he's disclosed in very specific detail showing exactly what's going on?
Yeah, I think he says it better than anyone else I've heard.
Okay, so let me just go ahead then. I'm sorry for the mix-up, folks, but you're listening to Ask Europe, Dr. KMD Garbville 91.1 FM from 7.30 to 8 o'clock. You're invited to call in with questions either related to this month's subject, which is going to be transhumanism. And based on a interview with Rainer Fuelmisch and Dr. David Martin, who's the head, Dr. David Martin is the chairman and has run the company, the CEO of the company called MCAM. In 1998, he started up as the world's largest underwriter of intangible assets used in finance, and this is what is important, folks, in 168 countries in the majority of the world. The entire managing body of all patents and patent applications, federal grants, procurement records, e-government records, etc., are stored there, and they have the ability to not only track what's happening and who's involved in what is happening, They monitor a series of schematic interests for a variety of organizations and individuals, as well as for their own commercial use. They monitor the innovation that's happening around the world, specifically to monitor the economics of those innovations, and the company's been running since 1998. They've reviewed the over 4,000 patents that have been issued around SARS coronavirus, and they've comprehensively reviewed the financing of all the manipulations of coronavirus, which gave rise to SARS as a subclade or family of the beta coronavirus family. So let's give you an overview here. The reported gene sequence, which was reportedly isolated as a novel coronavirus, indicated as such by the International Committee on Taxonomy of Viruses at the World Health Organization, took these actual genetic sequences that were reportedly novel and reviewed those against the patent records that were held by this company that I mentioned, that Dr. David Martin is the chairman and the CEO of. These patent records that were available as of the spring of 2020, and what they found was in the report that there was over 120 patented pieces of evidence to suggest that the declaration of a novel coronavirus was actually entirely a fallacy. There was no novel coronavirus. There are countless very subtle modifications of coronavirus sequences which have been uploaded, but there was no single identified novel coronavirus at all. As a matter of fact, they found records in the patent records of sequences attributed to novelty going to patents that were sought as early as 1999. Up to 1999, the patent activity surrounding coronaviruses was uniquely applied to veterinary scientists. The first vaccine ever patented for coronaviruses was sought by Pfizer. And the application for the first vaccine for coronavirus, which was specific for S spike protein, the exact same thing that allegedly we have rushed into invention. So the first filing in January of 2000, 21 years ago. So the idea that we mysteriously stumbled on the way to intervene on vaccines is not only ludicrous, but incredulous, because Timothy Miller, Sharon Cleaver, Albert Paul Reed, and Elaine Jones on January 28, 2000, filed U.S. patent number 637-2224, spike protein virus vaccine for what was ultimately issued as this patent. So the spike protein virus vaccine for the canine coronavirus, which was the first one that was issued, are one of multiple forms of coronavirus. And the early work up until 1999 was largely focused on the area of vaccines for animals. And the two animals receiving the most attention were the dog virus and the rabbit myopathy. And Ralph Berrick's work on rabbits with rabbit cardiomyopathy that was associated with significant loss amongst breeders, and also the canine coronavirus, in Pfizer's work to develop the S and spike protein vaccine target candidates. Neither the coronavirus concept of a vaccine nor the principle of the coronavirus itself as a pathogen of interest with respect to the spike protein's behavior is not at all. In fact, it's 22 years old based on patent filings. Dr. Martin carries on to state that what is more problematic and actually the most egregious problem is that Anthony Fauci and the NIAID found that the malleability of coronavirus to be a potential candidate for HIV vaccines, and so SARS is actually not a natural progression of a genetic modification of coronavirus. As a matter of fact, very specifically in 1999, Anthony Fauci funded research at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, specifically to create, now listen to this carefully, to create. This comes from a patent application filed on April 19, 2002. The NIAID built an infectious replication defective coronavirus specifically targeted to human lung epithelia, saying, quote unquote, we made SARS and we patented it April 19, 2002, before any alleged outbreak in Asia, which, as you know, followed that by several months. Patent number US 7279327 clearly lays out in specific gene sequencing the fact that we knew the ACE receptor, the ACE2 binding domain, the S1 spike protein, and other elements of what we've come to know as this scourge pathogen was not only engineered, but could be synthetically modified in the lab using nothing more than gene sequencing technology, taking computer code and turning it into a pathogen, or an intermediate of the pathogen, and that technology was funded exclusively in the early days as a means by which we could harness coronavirus as a vector to distribute HIV vaccine. You'll not see this on social media or YouTube, as it's not for your ears or eyes, but it can be witnessed on brand new tube, and we'll give the address out later on. So in the early 2000s, the anthrax event of September 2001 was getting attention. Bacterial and viral pathogens, which were being patented through the NIH, NIAID, the U.S. AMRID and Armed Services Infection Disease Program, and other agencies, whose concern was that the coronavirus was being seen not only as a potential manipulable agent for potential use as a vaccine vector, but it was also being clearly considered as a biological weapon candidate. First public reporting on this took place prior to the SARS outbreak in the latter part of 2001. And the China outbreak of 2002 and 2003 gave rise to a very problematic April 2003 filing by the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention. In addition to filing the entire gene sequence on what became SARS coronavirus, which is actually a violation of U.S. Code Section 35, Section 201 rather, Section 35 U.S. Code Section 101, you cannot patent a naturally occurring substance. That patent also had a series of derivative patents associated with it, two of which are U.S. 465-9703-P and U.S. 776521. These patents covered the gene sequence of SARS coronavirus, but also covered the means of detecting it using reverse transcriptase polymerase chain reactions, so RT-PCR. So you own the patent on the gene itself and on its detection. In other words, you control 100% of the provenance of the virus itself and its detection. The patent office not once but twice rejected as patentable the gene sequence because it was already in the public domain. And the CDC themselves overrode the patent office rejection, or the two rejections, and in 2017 got the patent on SARS-CoV. So then in June of 2008, Ablinks and Sanofi filed patents targeting the novel features of SARS coronavirus, using such terms as the polybasic cleavage site for SARS coronavirus and the receptor binding domain. In November the 24th, 2015, another patent was issued, US 919-3780, after the gain-of-function moratorium after the MERS outbreak in the Middle East. And a famous quote that was quoted by Dr. David Martin from Peter Daszak, who's the EcoHealth Alliance administrator, corroborating the non-lab leak, he said, "We need to increase public understanding of the need for medical countermeasures such as a pan-coronavirus vaccine. A key driver is the media, and the economics will follow the hype. We need to use that hype to our advantage to get to the real issues. Investors will respond if they see profit at the end of the process. The public must accept a pan-coronavirus vaccine." So he also carries on to outline that in 2004, Merck, under their coronavirus research, used the new normal as a campaign, a universal influenza vaccine. And Moderna knew it was going to be placed in the front of the line in developing a vaccine during March of 2019. And they amended a series of rejected patent filings to make reference to intentional and deliberate release of coronavirus. They amended four rejected patent applications to begin the process of coronavirus vaccine development. Significant problem was that they relied on technology they did not own. Two Canadian companies, Arbutus Pharmaceuticals and Acuitas Pharmaceuticals own the patent on the lipid nanoparticle envelope required to deliver the injection of the mRNA fragment. Now, Moderna tried to negotiate with the two companies, and also in 2016 to 2019, the NIAID board meeting, Fauci lamented that people were not going to engage in an influenza vaccine. Several other references were made to how this patent application issued by companies seeking complete ownership of a substance or a technique puts this doctor in a very important position to find written evidence of things that were happening, and he's saying that it is complete collusion and it is a despotic and tyrannous episode that's been foisted on people, and that the influenza vaccines are a decade-long vaccine mandate that's desperately failed by governments around the world, and they failed, and they decided if influenza doesn't deliver on the public decision to get a vaccine, let's change the pathogen. So I want to just give folks the address of this interview, which I think is so important and groundbreaking, and it's something that I could hardly believe my ears when I was hearing it. But I've also listened to Dr. David Martin in this May of 2020, when Dr. Pete and I and others around the world were saying this is not a pandemic. Apparently, influenza has disappeared. We're only seeing COVID cases. And other doctors were lamenting the fact that their failed treatments of intubation were killing people and that this was not the usual presentation, and that what they were dealing with was something very different. And we've covered all of the herbal anti-inflammatories that are certainly very safe and tolerable and effective that have been used, and hydroxychloroquine is one of those agents. Other antiparasitics, namely ivermectin, is also well indicated. Losartan as an ACE2 agent is well indicated, and Dr. Pete has named many other substances with anti-inflammatory activity that work very well. So the fact that Dr. David Martin outlines in patent records all of the filings specifically, and I believe there'll be some case. I know Wolfgang Wodarg was saying that there needs to be, and there are a lawyer organization, have been for 8 months or more, coming together to file lawsuits against what's happening because it's very unconstitutional. Is completely experimental, and people should not be forced under any way to take this experimental drug, which has, Dr. Pete will describe the next part, some very serious implications for people, and it's done as a huge illusion that this is something that is new. It's not new. It's basically been a weaponized product, and Dr. David Miller has all of the evidence. And he's not a conspiracist, and what you've been hearing us talk about for a long time now is not conspiracy, and people really need to start waking up and seeing how they're being manipulated. So, Dr. Pete, I'm sorry for taking such a long time up with the beginning of that, and I wanted to get your feedback on what I've said as part of what David Martin's outlined in terms of the timelines, the laboratories, Fauci's involvement with this, Gates' involvement, the World Health Organization, how this whole thing came about and how the whole world has been essentially brainwashed into accepting this universal vaccine for which there are more vaccines and more shots and a never-ending charade of illnesses and treatments which are coming down the pipeline of the mRNA science that we've all been seduced by.
The people behind this have been talking about ways to mobilize cultural change to get rid of the old economy and force a change to a new digital, artificial intelligence-based economy as a way of getting ahead of China is one of the arguments, but it's been a theme now for well over 10 years And the Rockefeller Foundation put out a publication showing the dreadful alternatives for the world if we don't conform and live online and digitally, and even change the nature of what it is to be human, that mere humans are not going to fit into the efficient digital future that they're proposing. More than 50 years ago, some of these trends were getting organized in the Club of Rome, for example, which said the population of the world has to be reduced. MIT has been a major force in helping to change the world, to get the world to believe that everything must be reduced to something that can be controlled and calculated by computers. In the 1940s and 50s, cybernetics was largely based on a reasonable approach to the world. Analog computers, mechanical governors of motors and so on. Norbert Wiener was one of the founders of this way of looking at the world, which has always it's centered on living human organisms, simply using computers as support and backup. But Norbert Wiener, teaching at MIT, was relegated to insignificance with the powerful government support given to supporting the digital approach to reality, leaving humans out of the equation unless they can be modified, changing their operating system is one of the images that is recurring. The people who are currently involved in promoting the vaccine presented the use of nucleic acids in so-called vaccines in terms of changing the operating system of the human being, turning organisms into something like cyborgs, changing their operating system to solve problems rather than going about it in traditional ways in which the person is considered an autonomous, intrinsically central being in the process rather than simply an auxiliary to a worldwide computer-controlled system.
I wanted to ask you, your take on this, because I also understood what was laid out in terms of quote unquote the Delta variant. Now that the world has to be scared and cowed into taking the vaccine if you haven't already, that it's all about the starting and stopping reading frame within which the genome is used to assign a difference. And he was also outlining this very scientifically, that there's absolutely zero difference.
Yeah, there's a website that has...
In these variants, there are no different variants. It's where you start and stop. And what you look for, if you look for it, you'll find it. If you don't look for it, you won't find it.
And there's a website on the Internet that has been publishing the exact sequences as mutations happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they have thousands of variations, very minor changes, but you could pick out any one of those thousands of slight modifications and say, this is a new variant. There are thousands of new variants, and all they have to do is decide to hype one particular thing and call it a new danger. They start simply by out of the air picking one of these thousands of variations and saying that now we have a new threat.
Right. So,
so they're twisting the facts, and it's propaganda when they talk about these variants. Is that what you're saying, Dr. P?
There are variants all over the world, but gathering evidence of whether any one of them specifically correlates to anything different from a common cold, the evidence just hasn't been established. That they will look at a person's blood, for example, and say, yes, they have antibodies to that are relevant to this particular variant. So maybe there's something actually meaningful there, but it's isolated information that doesn't have a context. There's no factual basis for saying that this is relevant to the world at large.
And you're listening to Ask Your Herb Doctor, KMUD Garbo 91.1 FM. From now until the end of the show, you're invited to call in with any questions about this month's subject of transhumanism and what it could mean for people living in the future with the methods at hand in the present to alter our genome and to create differences that never would have biologically occurred naturally. And so it's a very interesting subject, a very frightening subject in some ways, a very Frankensteinian subject. And I guess the future here in the very near future will play out in the next 1 to 3 years. We may or may not see some of the devastating effects of what's happened as this quote-unquote pandemic has been released and people have been cowed into absolute fear through the media, through the hype, through governments and collusion between companies and powerful interests. And it sounds like a big conspiracy, doesn't it? But it's truly frightening as much as the biggest the biggest conspiracies are often the ones that sound the most fantastic. They're actually there's actual reality involved in it. And I looked at the World Health Organization in the past year, that they actually said, and they were quoted in 2007 or 2008, that coronavirus was a dead interest. And that effectively the world didn't really have a problem with coronaviruses anymore. They were moving on from that as a specific targeted threat to other biological agents that were still ravaging the planet, you know, whether it's malaria or dengue fever maybe, or some of the other viral vectors that cause severe disease worldwide or in specific geographical locations, but that coronaviruses were basically a dead interest. It was all done. But then in 2019, the paper, quote-unquote, a world at risk, months before the alleged pathogen arrived on the scene, the paper described the need for a coordinated global experience of a respiratory pathogen release, which by September 2020 must be in place, and a universal capacity for public relations management, crowd control, and acceptance of the universal vaccine mandate must be in place. So it seems like the language of this intentional pathogen release has been fulfilled in the world at risk that was really mentioned here, and that the Global Preparedness Monitoring Board's unified statement was what I just said. So on the one hand, the WHO have dismissed coronavirus as a kind of dead interest. It wasn't really generating much fear or causing much death, and so let's move on to something more important. And yet, in 2019 here, they come with this statement, or the statement by the Global Preparedness Monitoring Board, saying that we've really got to get people in line, they've got to be cowed, they've got to take the vaccine, you know.
And could I butt in for a second here? We have a caller.
Yeah, great.
And also, I think I forgot to say at the beginning that the views and opinions expressed throughout the broadcast day on Redwood Community Radio are those of the speakers and not necessarily the station staff, volunteers, or underwriters. And here is our caller who called 923-3911.
Okay, caller, you're on the air. Where are you from? What's your question?
Yeah, my question is that I have an echo, unfortunately. I might have to be back.
Okay, I can hear you okay. I didn't hear an echo, but maybe you've got a radio that's on.
Can you hear the echo?
I don't hear the echo.
Yeah, my phone does this sometimes. I'll just call you back.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll wait for that caller to call back. And
we have another caller, though.
Engineer, just let us know when you've got him back on the line again.
Well, we have another caller who was behind him, so.
Okay, let's take this next caller then, and hopefully the first one will call back. I didn't get an echo. I don't know if you did, Engineer, but let's take
no,
this
I
next
didn't.
Caller. You're on the air. What's your question? Where are you from?
Hi, is that me?
Yeah, go ahead.
So you were talking about messing up RNA and nucleic acids and stuff like that, so I was just wondering what you thought about eating sardines as a protective food. I heard that they have a unique calcium compound and are very rich in RNA, DNA, nucleic acids. So I was just, even though they have a bit of PUFA, I was just wondering your opinion on sardines.
Yeah, okay. Well,
especially
I'll
in
just,
this yeah, context.
Your opinion on sardines?
Some of the nucleic acids in all of our foods can reach the bloodstream and can even be incorporated into our cells. But if it's just from an ordinary organism, our cells generally check the meaning of these stretches of RNA and DNA, and most of them are rejected. Very small amounts of our food nucleic acids can be incorporated into our own genome, but they're simply the instructions for making proteins for sardines or cows or carrots or whatever the food item happens to be, and there's nothing special or toxic about foreign DNA. It's possibly useful, possibly harmful, but most of it is discarded, not assimilated. But the vaccine RNA and or DNA is specifically only a harmful, a designer of a harmful, a very toxic protein, the spike protein, and it's deliberately designed to get into our cells. Once this blueprint for a toxic protein is inside the cell, it has the possibility, as demonstrated by experimenters at Harvard, MIT, in vitro, they showed that the vaccine RNA can be reverse transcribed by the intrinsic enzymes of our cells and turned into DNA. And that DNA has the possibility of enduring in the cell after the vaccine RNA has been eliminated. And the assumption of the people making the vaccines, people like Byron Bridle, a virologist in Canada, said that everyone assumed that the vaccine would stay where they put it. But in fact, the Pfizer document of a study done in Japan that was released fairly recently showed that they knew that the RNA and the other materials in the vaccine left the site of vaccination, quickly got into the bloodstream, circulated throughout the body, and was concentrated in various organs, including the bone marrow and especially the ovaries, exactly the places you don't want endlessly producing a very toxic protein.
And we have two more callers.
Okay, let's take, if you were finished with that feedback there, Dr. Pete, or we can take the next two callers and see where these questions are going. So essentially, nucleic acids from sardines, would you rate them as a problem, or?
I couldn't hear that.
Okay, never mind. I'm sorry about the connection here, folks, with the things where they are. We're not in the studio. Hopefully, the next month or the month after, things will be back to normal. Huh? Okay, so let's take the next call. Caller, you're on the air. Where are you from? What's your question?
Caller, that's you.
Caller?
Okay, well, we'll say 3, 2, 1, and here is the second caller who I told to listen on the phone. Let's see if he's listening on the phone.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I was looking at the COVID page today, and apparently Humboldt is doing fairly well. They've lost one person since the 8th of July, and then Mendocino, I think, has not lost anyone since July 1st started. But for the most part, the smartest thing to do with this would be not to spread it. And there are places in Southern California, San Bernardino County, they're losing 30 people a day. I think they're 10,000, and it's not 10,000 brand new cases per day, but it's up there. And so just don't travel would be a smart advice.
Okay. Well, thank you for your comments. And let's take the next caller. We're on KMBD Garbage 91.1 FM until 8 o'clock at the end of the show. You're invited to call in number 707-923-3911. Dr. Raymond Peake, a guest speaker, and this month's subject may roll into next month's transhumanism: what we will become. Perhaps.
And we have our next caller on the air. Caller, you're on the air. Oh. Well, here, let's try this caller. Caller, you are on the air.
Some technical difficulty all around.
Yeah, I'm not hearing this caller. Caller, can you hear me? You want to go on? Well, you guys talk amongst yourselves, and I'll get someone else lined up.
see if they call back then. Okay, so until they call back, just again, Dr. Pete, would you quickly speak on the disappearance of influenza and what that really entails in terms of numbers and where we're gathering the data from, et cetera?
The influenza vaccination campaign was very intense, but they were seeing complications such as if you were vaccinated for influenza the following season, you're more likely than otherwise to contract any of the coronaviruses, more like the common cold virus. There was a lot of disillusionment about the influenza virus, and the figures had been inflated by the CDC, calling it influenza, when actually only 10% of the pneumonia cases had influenza as the cause. But they were still publishing large numbers of pneumonia deaths ascribed to influenza infection until the second week of April of 2020. That week, their influenza deaths went almost to zero, and simultaneously, there was this huge spike in deaths ascribed to COVID. So as influenza disappeared from the world, COVID mortality replaced it exactly. Genevieve Briand at Johns Hopkins University, a statistician, did a careful analysis of the cause of death, and even heart disease deaths decreased drastically at the same time influenza disappeared. So now, for over a year, the world has been historically deficient in so-called influenza, and approximately similar numbers of pneumonia cases and deaths are being blamed on COVID. That kind of a mysterious substitution in reality is beyond credibility. It's obviously a fabricated change of names.
And we have two callers.
Okay, Dr. P, let's take this first, the two callers here, see where we're going with the question. So, caller, you're on the air. Where are you from? What's your question?
This is Rob from Missoula.
Hey, Rob.
Montana. Hi. Yes, Dr. Pete, I'm really enjoying the discussion, and I had something a little off topic. My body temperatures are pretty normal at about 97.8 to 98.8, but if I go out for a walk or any kind of exercise, regardless of the warmth outside, it'll drop 3 or 4 degrees and then come back up slowly over about half an hour or so up to normal. And I was wondering what might be going on.
How are you taking your temperature?
I've tried it axially and orally. Just to make sure it wasn't I was breathing cold air or something.
Yeah,
it's pretty sure that that's actually what's happening.
I'm not sure what could be causing that, but I think it would be good to check your pulse rate at the same time and see what your pulse is doing when your temperature is dropping so much.
Dr. Pete,
I was wondering if it might have anything to do with glycogen storage.
Yeah, it takes fairly strong exercise to deplete your glycogen to the point that your blood sugar would be very low. But if your liver isn't storing glycogen because of hypothyroidism, for example, then exercise does quickly bring on stress, releasing things like serotonin, which chemically try to put you into hibernation, turn off your heat production.
And
okay,
and we have one more caller, and we're almost out of time.
Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. Let's take this next caller quickly, and let's give
good evening, Dr.
Pete.
I am interjecting a question about my 79-year-old boyfriend, who's a very tall man, about 6'4". He woke up yesterday with vertigo. It's his 79-year-old birthday party on the 14th because of it. What would you recommend?
First,
vertigo.
First checking.
Like the whole world is swirling around at 2 o'clock in the morning.
It could be some event in the brain or inner ear, but something that's always important to check is whether there's any bowel disturbance. diarrhea or discomfort in the abdomen can release surges of endotoxin, histamine, and serotonin that cause inflammation in the inner ear and vertigo.
Yes.
I don't think it's good to assume that something like a stroke is involved until you've checked on the condition of the bowel.
He seemed to be okay the next day, and I don't know, you know, I've never seen him get like that, although 7 or 8 years ago he did have a severe flu, which put him 14 days in the emergency room, and his heartbeat went to 187, and then he's been fine ever since. And it's weird because he, like, did get a Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and so did I. But is it really only 70% effective or what? I don't know. I mean, I don't like the concept of RNA virus. I mean, RNA anything. Because, you know, ribonucleic acid is, you know, the anti-spiral effect of DNA, and I don't like anti-despiralization of my DNA code. I don't believe in it.
Okay, thank you. We got to wrap up now.
Okay, thanks for your call. Dr. Pete, thank you so much. It's gone so quickly. I have so much more to get into, but thank you for your time, Dr. Pete. Let me give you your information now and more information about where people can access the information we've discussed.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, so for people that have listened to the show, Dr. David Martin, you've really got, I mean, I know people get emails about you must see this, you must see that, and people get tired. And I think, unfortunately, that's what's happening to a lot of people. They're just getting tired, and they don't want to look too much further. But essentially, this man wrapped it up in about an hour and 15 minutes, exactly what came to be with the drug companies, the patents, follow the money. It's what we've always said, follow the money. And Dr. Pete's always said there's been no big uptick in deaths from influenza, COVID, etc., and that it's a very media-driven conspiracy, and that Dr. David Martin puts the facts together in a very succinct way, and he's not at all a conspiracist, but he's an analyst, a financial analyst of the patents that his company holds in keeping for financial reasons for the people that file the patents. So obviously, there are lawyers, attorneys involved with this to make sure and scrutinize the patents and the activities, and it's a worldwide business. 168 countries are represented by his firm, most of the world, and he's been doing this for over 20 years. So brand new tune, because you won't find it on YouTube. I wonder why. But listen, he's on YouTube in his own right for other discussions, and people can go to brand new tube and type in a manufactured illusion. It was actually published July the 9th. And he has an interview with Rainer Fulmi, and he very clearly lays out all the timeline from 1998 through to now, and the actors involved and the reasons. And I think there's going to be a lot of pushback against what's been foisted on us. So I appreciate people listening to the show. Dr. Pete can be reached at raypete.com, raypeat.com. We can be reached at westernbotanicalmedicine.com. A lot of the archive material is on our website and the archives are on YouTube. But listen to the brand new tube. Go to brand new tube and type in a manufactured illusion, Dr. David Martin, with Rainier Ulrich. You won't believe what you're going to hear, folks. Thanks for your time. And until the third Friday of next month, my name's Andrew.
My name's Sarah Johannesson Murray. Thank you for listening.
Good night.
It is 7:59. This is Redwood Community Radio, KMUD Garberville, KMUE Eureka, KLAI Laytonville. Get prepared to step out on a wing and a prayer with Shyla and Shaka.